Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and I am so happy because joining me in the studio today is my longtime co-conspirator, collaborator, Jessica Schleif. Jessica!
Woo!
Welcome.
Hi, Teresa. Thanks so much for inviting me to come on.
I'm so excited to talk with you again. I love our conversations where we just kind of riff about what's happening in the season. And a lot of times I think we end up doing these at like season transitions. And I feel like we're at a seasonal transition right now. It's kind of spring heading into summer-ish. It's not summer yet.
Yeah.
But it's going to be soon. And boy, the weather seems confused.
I love these jumps, like that 81 degree day where it was like 20 degree jump.
I know. I mean, I don't know that I love them. I think love is the wrong word.
Yeah, that is the wrong
word. I'm
just
confused and sad.
I guess that's a sarcastic, love.
So spring has always felt kind of confusing. It feels like there's a lot of weather that can be like, oh my God, it's gonna be really hot. Oh, it's gonna be really cold. So I was away this past weekend and I came back to the farm, walking around yesterday morning, just checking in, seeing how things were. And I'd known it was gonna be sunny and warm, but it must have gotten really cold as well.
Yeah, we definitely had some nighttime, like, ooh, where's my jumper?
I had a whole row of bush beans that were just emerging that looked like they got totally frostbitten.
Ooh, you get a little bit colder out there though, huh?
Total cold damage. And I was so confused. Like, I was first going, what happened? What, you know, I'm pretty sure it was an overspray by an herbicide, not on my farm, but it was so weird. Like, there was cold damage. It was the end of May.
Yeah.
And then it was going to be in the high 70s that day. Mm-hmm. So so we're having some confusing weather, and that can make things really challenging to know, is it time to put something outside? Is it not? How are things responding? Should I be watering? Should I not? Mm-hmm. So I'm saying this with like empathy and compassion for all the gardeners out there who are like, what is going on?
Observation. Mm-hmm. Observation. Like checking on your plants, checking on the water. That's what I was just doing. I was running around, seeing that everybody still had a little moisture left in there.
Mm-hmm. And soil moisture can be so tricky too, because it depends on the kind of soil you have. And
For sure.
It can look really dry on the surface, and maybe even that top inch can be really dry. But if you dig down a little bit, you'd be like, oh yeah, there's plenty of moisture here.
Yep.
Or it could be really bone dry.
Putting our fingers into it. Yeah. Observations.
You got to get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
You got to get your hands dirty.
For sure.
But if you have a water, if you hand water, you're just going to have to figure it out. But if you do have a watering system, this is a really great time of year to check it.
Mm-hmm.
Check for leaks. I've been doing that a lot with my irrigation as I'm putting it out. Where are the leaks? Do you need to patch? Is it working? And having that kind of anticipation.
That's so funny. I just saw Becky at the co-op yesterday, like running her system, looking at where the...
Well, because, you want to make sure that when you need it, you really, it's working.
Sure.
Because the worst thing in the world is to have those suddenly hot days. And it's just really hard to know what the summer is going to be like.
It's true. And we keep having, schizophrenic weather going back and forth.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I've definitely been hearing in the news a lot of people talking about the big El Nino possibly building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, might be officially in September, we might be in this, like...
drought.
Very drought situation.
And I'm having that feeling. I have definitely been doing some extra... mulching in the gardens, really thinking about my mulch layer and where it needed to be replaced or replenished.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about mulch, because I think that is a great strategy for dealing with moisture retention in the soil. And even though like we're anticipating some rain this week, it's still something that you want to think about, because we could suddenly just not have rain for 3 months.
It's true. And I am really very aware of any bare soil that I have right now. In my own home garden last night, I was clearing out my spots, thinking about my cuberates that I've been moving in and out of my sunroom. Or recently I've been treating my truck like a greenhouse in the evenings.
Putting your plants in the...
I do.
Oh, hey, a little protection.
It is. And I've never done that before, and it's really been working. Anyway, I was clearing out some spots for these pumpkins that I've been babying along. And just really aware that I didn't want to open up too much soil. And I've got a lot of fennels, volunteer fennels, and some different volunteer things that I'm just cutting. And as I'm weeding and kind of opening up spaces and doing some more like top dressing with compost, I'm then laying down my fennel. I'm laying down some rhubarb leaves that I had to take off. I'm using some of my natural materials. And obviously, this is not something you can do on a farm scale.
You know, I don't know that that's true, because I strategically have been doing something very similar to that, which you've inspired me with, this kind of, I think you call it like a chop and drop. So when you're weeding, as long as it's material that isn't like a weed that's gone to seed.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something that's diseased foliage. Like if it's just green material.
Yeah, high grading our green material.
It's just like you just pull that weed out, or you pull that spent plant or whatever, chop it into some smaller pieces and use that as your mulch. And I planted some, a lot of potatoes this year in our dry farm area. So they're unirrigated. And last year we had this interesting experience where we did a row of dry farm potatoes. I hadn't grown potatoes for a while, and we're kind of excited about trying it again. So we planted the potatoes, and then normally in the past, I hilled them up. It was very labor intensive because I really hilled them up, and it's like my body was just like, oh, hilling potatoes, which is partly why I stopped growing potatoes.
Right, right.
But we got really busy, and talking to my farmhand Caitlin, who has her own cool farm this year. I want to just, you know, put out a shout out to Caitlin. She's doing a great job growing produce. She's leasing a small part of our farm to do her own produce operation called Fed Up Produce, and I'm really proud of her. So check her out when you can. But she, we just never got back to the potatoes to hill them up. And they grew and they flowered and they did all the potato-y things. And I was like, oh, we're going to have a terrible harvest, because it just never got hilled up. But then we went back and dug them up, and there were tons of potatoes in there. Yeah. And I thought, why am I spending all this time and energy hilling up?
Teresa, you are. I have been thinking so much about the areas where we overwork.
Yeah. And it made me realize, like, I don't think I need to hill my potatoes.
Yeah.
But I do want to mulch around them a little bit just to kind of help keep weeds down. So where we planted the potatoes this year, I was like cleaning out big, like huge areas of in our high tunnel, like spent mustard greens and things like that were just starting to go to flower, and just chopped it and dropped it all along the potatoes that were just starting to emerge as like a little mulch around the potatoes. And it's all drying down now, and it's a great mulch. And so I totally, on a very long scale, these are like 100-foot rows of potatoes.
Okay. And I stand corrected.
Well, we had enough plant material that it did about two of the rows. And then I'll probably buy some straw to do the third one.
Yeah.
But I just thought, I'm not going to just put all this in a compost area. Why don't I just compost it in place?
So
and
smart.
It worked out great. So I think if I had like 1,000 acres, I wouldn't be doing that. But I think like, within context, I think that's a great way to use up plant material that you're pulling out
for
of your garden.
For sure. In the springtime when we're cutting back our ornamental grasses, I am so thankful that I have so many ornamental grasses in the plantings that I care for. They are so great to chop and drop and fill in at the back of the borders or in between plants. Mm-hmm. And just keep building it up.
Mm-hmm. And it's all organic matter that's slowly going to break down.
Stressing, this is not things that are going to seed. This is not things that are disease. This isn't our leftover fruit tree leaves or things.
Yeah, you definitely want to be careful what you're doing. But again, plant material, I mean, this is what compost is. It's just broken down, decomposed plant material.
It's amazing to see, you know, and I use a lot of straw too. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing to see when you have left some ground alone and just continually built up. You might have main plants and you're mulching in between with this kind of technique. And, you know, you go back in a couple of seasons and my soil structure is changed under there.
Mm-hmm.
It's so happy to be covered and keep that moisture in.
Yeah, and it's just allowing the slow decomposition, you know, all the little bugs and worms and creatures that are going up and down and breaking that down and turning it into just smaller organic matter. And that layer really does hold moisture in the ground. And so that's, I guess, you know, we started out with is it going to keep raining? Are we going to have a drought? And mulching your beds, I find even just a thin layer of mulch can really make a difference for soil moisture retention.
For sure.
Especially if you're in lighter soils or sandier soils. But even in heavier soils and clay soils, because clay soils can start to crack when it dries out.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
And then it's just like a double whammy because they're cracking. They become really hard, but those cracks are allowing all the moisture down below to escape. This mm-hmm. is one of the things that I have to be really careful of in my dry farmed beds. So these are beds on my farm where I'm growing crops without any additional irrigation, and I often come along with a hoe, like just one of those stirrup hoes or scuffle hoes.
Yeah, and you're just working the surface, aren't
you? Just
to
kind of loosen up the soil. It, you get the weeds, but it's also keeping that topsoil surface really loose so that it's not cracking.
Yeah.
And that loose soil that is just like, that's the mulch as well. It kind of holds the moisture in down below. It's
so interesting. That is one of the most inspirational things that out at the farm for me. I'm always like, ooh, dry farming. And it's the way of the future.
Well, I think finding ways to reduce our water usage mm-hmm. is really important. Even if it feels crazy in these times where it's like, you know, the end of May, beginning of June, and it's raining and it's still raining. And we can feel here on the coast like, oh, there's plenty of water. Why would I need to worry about water?
But I wish I could feel like that. I feel like I have kind of a low grade anxiety this time of year, thinking about when is the drought cycle going to start?
Yeah.
How long will it mm-hmm. be? Yeah. Every time I see rain in the forecast right now, I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, yay.
I'm very excited. And I think this is something, too, to think about. Like, if you are thinking about planting annuals, especially like an annual veg garden, there's still plenty of time. You know, it's time to plant cucumbers and melons and squash. Mm-hmm. You know, Jessica hasn't planted her potatoes yet or pumpkins yet. I haven't planted most of my winter squash is still to go on the ground, hopefully this week while it's raining.
Yeah.
So there's lots of time to still plant those. Tomatoes, you can still plant tomatoes. I mean, from a plant, I wouldn't start from seed
now.
Beans, you know, lots of leafy greens. You can still get stuff like that going. You can still sow carrots. But it's great if you can do that when there's still moisture in the soil or where
so
we might
true.
Get some rainfall. That really helps those plants settle in.
Yeah. And in the ornamental garden world, we're coming mm-hmm. up to the cutoff time.
Yeah. When you,
know,
you just
like
need to
stop
get your...
planting, mm-hmm. take care of things, mm-hmm. you know, do your mulching. And I am really turning towards a heavier grade chip in areas where I'm not thinking about starting things from seed mm-hmm. or self-sowers in the backs of borders or, in established plantings where I'm not going to be changing things. And
you're not digging up and moving plants around.
I'm not digging up and moving around. I'm using a heavier grade chip.
And that really helps with,
it got it.
Well, the chip can really help hold moisture like a wood chip.
Exactly. Yeah. And it takes a lot longer to break down than mm-hmm. using like a composted hemlock bark or something like that, like a mm-hmm. traditional bark dust. And that
it can
is
look
so,
lovely, too.
I think it looks great. You use that type of.
I like, do. I get wood chips from Arborist.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. And I love that they, you know, drop their refuse, their waste at my farm, and then I get to use that to mulch. We use wood chips to mulch all of our paths at the farm, and that really, really helps with weed control, but then also moisture retention as well. And that wood breaking down.
That wood breaking
down
slowly.
Oh, you get some amazing fungi, the mycorrhizal
exactly.
fungi that starts to come out of it.
Yeah.
That wasn't why I started using wood chip. It was just like a resource that I could get my hands on. But the benefits of it over time have really... really come to show me like this is a great
again observation. Mm-hmm. You know, you observe that your potatoes could produce without doing something that you thought you needed to do. And that I'm really looking at the garden systems that I'm involved in and enjoying experimenting and encouraging other people to experiment. We don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take a break right here and just say that if you are just joining us today on KMUN for In Season, I am speaking today with the wonderful Jessica Schleif. And Jessica has been gardening, taking care of gardens, working with plants in this area for many, many years, and has such extensive knowledge and experience with how things grow in this area, both native plants and, you know, their non-native friends, and sometimes their non-native frenemies. And so there are always great conversations that we can have, and I learn so much and get so many ideas from you. And I love what you're saying about that we need to observe and pay attention and don't necessarily be stuck in really rigid, well, this is the way I've always done it, or this is the way that some book told me to do it, or someone told me I had to do it this way.
And also, there's some hard and fast things. I remember saying this years ago, and you were like, Jessica, there's only so many hours in the day this time of year. Yeah. You know, there are still limitations and guidelines to observe.
Yeah, and there are things that are just certain realities about, like if a plant needs full sun to grow and flourish, you can't plant it in the shade and expect it to grow and flourish, you know? And so understanding the needs, I think it's more understanding the basic needs of a plant and then trying to give it that.
That, and then putting together communities or plant families that have like requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's also hard to speak generally about gardening in this area because there's so many microclimates. And I, when people ask me gardening questions, my first question to them is, where do you live?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you in Cannon Beach? Are you in Jewel?
Yes.
Are you out on the Long Beach Peninsula? If you're in Astoria, where in Astoria are you? Are you on the South Slope? Are you in Upper Town?
This is always my question, too. Oh, where are you?
Yeah.
So that I can kind of get a visual, like, oh, they're up on the hill. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're over on the South Slope.
Yeah. And how much tree cover do you have?
Yeah.
Or how much sun? Do you get morning sun or afternoon sun?
Yeah.
And all those things affect what you can grow. What will grow well in your garden. And then there's also an acceptance, right? We have to come to terms with, like, I may want to grow that, but it doesn't want to grow in my garden.
And also trying things in different places in your garden.
Mm-hmm. So just because it doesn't work in this one spot doesn't mean it won't work anywhere.
Exactly.
So be willing to move things around.
Yeah, willing to move things around and or, you know, like this year with the indigo seedlings. I newly adopted again a community garden plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, you know, I know I've prepped this bed in my home garden for the indigo, but why don't I try a little row down there too and see how they do. Yeah, see how they do. See if they might like to be with the beans and the pumpkin. And
it's always good to try different things, and I feel like that's one of the joys of gardening, is being able to experiment. And, you know, every death is an opportunity. You know, if a plant dies or you've lost, you know, maybe in bad weather over the winter, or a plant's just reached the end of its natural life cycle and now you've got a hole, and it can be sad, especially if you loved that plant, but it can also be an opportunity to try something new.
It can, and also it can be an opportunity to have some fun with some annuals.
Yeah.
You know, and make that commitment to a new plant in the fall when we can plant and know that it has that whole rainy season to put its little feet down into the soil.
Yeah, so talk a little bit more about that, because I think that sometimes, you know, you go to garden stores, to nurseries now, and there's so many plants available. Mm-hmm. But there are times of years when it's better to plant certain things than others. And you're saying we're kind of coming up on the end of that window for perennials.
It's true. It's hard for things. And I'm not saying that you can't. And you can't.
You just have to water them.
You just have to water the heck out of them. And you're kind of tied to that in a different way than you are with your established plants.
Because their root system isn't extensive yet.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's harder for them to establish roots under more stressful summer conditions.
Yes. And sometimes can even with, you know, shrubs or larger scale ornamental grasses or perennials, sometimes it can take multiple seasons to really, you know, get into the soil and root down enough that it can put up a real show of a plant.
Mm-hmm.
or be happy. The plant is happy. Sometimes if you just can't live without something this time of year, I'll put them in containers that are really close to the house.
So that you can keep them watered.
So that you can keep them watered and keep an eye on them and get to know the plant before you're putting it out in situation in the plant beds.
That is a really good idea. That's a really good idea. Because I think about, you know, I know people who like, you know, going to the nurseries or going down to the Sunday market, and there's the people with all the plants and shrubs, and they're beautiful and they're blooming and they look so gorgeous, and it's like hydrangeas and all these other gorgeous, gorgeous plants. And, you know, in these, you know, little pots. I mean, not some of them are bigger pots, but, you know, kind of little pots.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess you could go home and plant it.
You could go home and plant it. You could go home and pot it up.
Into a bigger pot?
Into a bigger pot.
And just take care of it.
And take care of it and look at it and love on it and figure out where you're going to put it. And maybe you already know where you're going to put it.
Yeah.
But those holes, they are opportunities. Yeah. Think about annuals. Think about sunflowers.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about sunflowers. They're such a crazy flower in a lot of ways. And they can get really big. There's smaller ones that are lovely too. But it's hard to like find a place for them in a really established garden. So sometimes maybe that is your opportunity of like, oh, that shrub died. I'm just going to plant sunflowers there.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
so joyful.
They are. And it's okay. We don't have to have the perfect English garden borders. Sometimes we can just invite a wild card to the party.
I love too with a lot. I mean, I do grow a lot of annuals and I grow a lot of annual flowers. And one of the things that I love about them so much is how much the insects love them. How many of those annual flowers are just magnets for bees and hoverflies and butterflies and all of those things. You can really bring those into your garden in a way that is just delightful and really important for the insects to have all that food.
For sure.
But just so fun to watch.
I see it even in areas where, you know, I'm really encouraging people that have lawns to think about what parts of them it's important to them to be mowed. And maybe there's areas that are off in the distance, or there's a little circular patch or something that they don't mow. And I am just amazed at what kind of habitat that can provide.
Absolutely, yeah. That kind of meadow habitat is so important for insects as well. And it's also less work for you.
Yeah. Well, that, just thinking about how we can strategize.
I know. I keep trying to tell myself that our lawn in front of our house, it's a meadow. But it's like, oh, no, it's not a meadow yet. You just have to go mow it.
I say faux meadow.
Yeah. I don't think ours is a faux meadow. I think it's just like, oh, I haven't gotten to that yet. But we've been talking about it. And like, you know, it is really hard sometimes this time of year to get there to mow, you know, of all the other things I've got to do. Getting out the lawnmower and making the front of our house look like a golf course is a very low priority for me.
Around the edges and a little pathway. And then suddenly it looks intentional.
I know. But we've been talking about doing a meadow there. And just like, I mean, it does involve like you have to kill the grass. So we'd have to like tarp it and that's its own thing. But the idea that we could just plant a bunch of things that would just come up and flower and be habitat and we just wouldn't have to mow it again.
Yeah.
It's on my agenda.
Yeah.
It is
on
my agenda.
All about taking out the lawns. I have zero lawn now. Zero.
At your house?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I eliminated all the lawn from my house strip, the little patch of back lawn, yard lawn. It's all gone. It's all gone.
That sounds so fantastic.
Yeah, it's so nice to not have to
mow.
Yeah. I'd rather spend my time doing something else in the garden, like sitting with a little cup of tea.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know that there are people who really love the mow, love their riding lawnmower or even just their manual one or their electric one. And I think that for some people that really well-kept lawn is their thing. And I get it. And there is no lawn judgment here. I just know for myself personally, it's a real challenge to maintain that. And I think it's also like if that's not your thing, that it is totally okay to find alternatives for a lawn and that, you know, again, this idea of like, well, here's what you should do. That, here's what your garden is supposed to look like.
And we can change the culture one lawn at a time.
But just to give yourself permission that you don't have to have a garden that looks like your neighbor's.
No.
That you can have whatever makes you happy.
They might not think that, but...
Well, you know, you don't think their garden looks so great.
You know what, though? Like, that health strip that I did in my neighborhood, people stop all the time and talk about it now. You know, there's a lot of interest there. There's a lot of critters and pollinators and that are using that space and sheltering in that space now.
It can be really inspiring. I mean, so yeah, I guess I would just encourage people this year to like think about change, think about adventure, think about exploring different things to do with your garden. Mulch with whatever material you've got to hand.
Mulch. Look at the things that you are enjoying. Look at the successes.
Yeah.
Look at the Pacific irises that you moved last year that are blooming on year one, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's good to focus on those things because there's always going to be things that are not doing well.
Or weeds.
Dying or weeds. There will always be weeds. You know, and weeds are just plants in the wrong place.
Exactly.
Or the place we don't want them.
Exactly.
They want to be there. So.
Or maybe we can think about, you're okay there.
Yeah, not thistles.
No, not the thistles.
I'm not okay with them. So yeah, it's just, it's a really interesting time of year, this transition into summer. And it's very exciting. There's like so much explosion of growth, so much color starting, so much beauty. And, you know, I think, yeah, just set yourself up to enjoy. Set yourself up to enjoy your summer as much as you can in the garden because it's a fleeting season.
For sure.
It always goes by way too fast.
For sure.
But it's so amazing once it's here. I do really enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to so many. I always feel like it's like old friends coming to visit when plants start to bloom or they start to set fruit. I'm like, oh, hey, I haven't seen you for a year.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah.
I know. It feels, I feel sort of silly sometimes saying that, but I'm getting really excited. For like, well, my dahlias to bloom. I'm like, oh, you're
so
beautiful.
No, the roses right now. I was just down in the rose garden that's right below the radio station before I came up here and just really having this joyful feeling. Like, hi. Oh, like this year. Oh, I guess that pruning worked.
Yeah. That is a really good feeling too. Yeah. When you've done some extensive pruning
and mulching.
And mulching. Or sometimes we had to really be brutal to the plants around our house last year because we were painting it. And I was like, oh, are they going to come back? And they're coming back.
Yeah.
And it's great. I didn't kill anything. So that was always a plus. I always feel like that's a success when I don't kill plants.
Yeah, getting to see the resilience of the natural world is always a like, whoo.
I know. And it is really resilient. And I feel like it's good to remember that. You know, it's good to know our place in it and the things we can do to help that resilience. But nature's figuring it out. And we need to play our part in that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Follow the nature.
Absolutely.
Are nature.
We are nature. Yeah. So I hope that this season is good for everybody. Jess, it's been so great to talk to you
Teresa,
again.
Oh, Teresa, thank you so much.
I know. And people, if you are, you know, like have questions, I mean, you can always reach out to Master Gardeners at the OSU Extension Service, wherever, whatever county you're in. They're a great
chat with your neighbors that have great gardens.
Yeah. Really get out there and enjoy the season. Yeah. It's a really good time of year on the North Coast. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Happy summer.
Yeah.